Hello and welcome to The Bond, the Christian podcast for attachment and needs-based parenting. We want to understand children's hearts, reach parents' hearts, and see God with new eyes. My name is Johanna, I come from Germany, and I have almost 3 kids. You are listening to the second part of the adoption topic. If you haven't heard the first part yet, or you have already forgotten it, we strongly recommend to listen to it first. Today we would like to address the questions we left you with last time from the perspective of brain research and also from the Bible. Doesn't frustration have to be nipped in the bud? Does a child learn self-control and social behavior if we allow him to have emotional outbursts? And how can a child who is raging with frustration find their way to the sadness and tears of futility? Of course, we still want to tell you how Monica reacted to her frustrated child in the city center. Let's go back to the situation. Monica's child is not allowed to ride the toy car a second time and completely freaks out, screaming, "But I want to do it again! You're stupid for not letting me do this!" He tries to hit and is completely out of control. And it's certainly true that something like this makes most of us extremely angry. It pushes us to the limits of our own self-control, especially if we are already under stress all day long. The vast majority of adults would now probably grab the child roughly, maybe yell back or hiss at him quietly so the others don't hear, shame him, drag him away or let him rage there alone. Try to ignore him or even walk away. Most would punish him, giving a consequence so that he understands that such behavior is not reasonable and not acceptable. These are the most common strategies to deal with a child's frustration or unwanted behavior. Many of these courses of action are also recommended in parenting guides. Angry children are not welcome. Bad behavior must be discouraged, and good, appropriate behavior must be taught through the methods just mentioned. But what if, in this situation, the problem is not the frustration, but the transgressive handling of that frustration? In biblical words, if you are angry, do not sin. We do not have to suppress or condemn the child's frustration and thereby force self-control where there is no brain maturity yet. But this often happens with sentences like, "Now don't be like that. You have no reason to shout. Stop it right now. Nobody wants to hear that," and so on. These are phrases that come automatically to our lips, and we are sure you know them too. But here comes an important idea that may surprise you. Frustration is okay. If you give them space, accept them and show understanding, children can also learn to deal with their frustration and let it out in the right way. If not in childhood, then when? Now, maybe a lot of buts will be activated in you. Where will we end up if my child throws themselves on the floor and screams everywhere and about everything? They will then learn to always act that way in order to get what they want. What are the others supposed to think if I don't have my child under control? You can let go of these beliefs because they are driven by a deep subconscious fear, and fear is not something we want in our parenting. The biggest fear is probably that this frustration of our child will get out of hand and he will remain rebellious and become antisocial, and therefore we try to vehemently suppress this frustration. And in doing so, we are only causing the opposite. Actually, it is paradoxical, because we want to suppress the child's anger with our own anger. The child's frustration triggers a hidden anger inside of you that makes you do wrong things. But that's your problem. Don't take it out on your child. Your child is learning how to handle frustration from you. It is you who has to deal with frustration and find a healthy way to deal with it. It is probably obvious that trying to suppress frustration has no good long-term consequences, because we will be experiencing frustration throughout our lives. Therefore, it is even more important to find a healthy way of dealing with frustration when the situation cannot be changed. How does our child's anger turn into sadness? In this episode, we will only be able to give very rough answers, but over time we will go into much of this in more detail. To arrive at a vulnerable feeling of grief, your children need to have, first, you as their attachment figure. You are the answer to their greatest needs. Not what you do or know, but simply you. You should have the mature nervous system that can stay calm. With you, your children feel loved unconditionally and don't have to pull themselves together or stay strong, because like this grief can't arise. Trusting you, they can let go. Your children need someone who does not freak out right away, but can give them the same feeling that Jesus wants to give us. I stay with you. I am your rock, your refuge. And even if you are in the darkest valley, if you rebel against me, I am there. It doesn't change anything about my love for you. Come to me when you are tired and burdened. You never need to be afraid of me. This inner attitude is the first and most important point so your child can move from frustration to sadness. Second, a soft heart that has not been hardened by past situations. The process of hardening happens in the brain because of fear or of hurt or humiliation, or when the child encounters a lack of understanding towards his feelings. Children immediately sense if you feign understanding just to get them to stop whining, or if you really want to understand them. Third, time. Probably more time than we often feel is acceptable. And fourth, a safe space for vulnerability and the invitation to come into that space. We are convinced that our education should be motivated only by trust in our child and in the power of God's love. Attachment has the most decisive influence in the adoption process. First, the child gets the chance to feel frustration, and he has a mature attachment figure at his side who can regulate his feelings again. Someone who, through his presence, through an understanding attitude, empathetic facial expressions and perhaps tender touches can lead the child's overstrained nervous system back into rest mode, where the child can find his way to his vulnerable feelings and to his tears. Anyone who has had the chance to such outside regulation as a child has given their nervous system the time it needs to mature, and they will be able to handle strong feelings well in later life without losing control. They have developed true self-control. When small children still need help, and sometimes it seems as if they will never learn it, but maturity does not happen overnight. When the child grows up, he can then accept futility without breaking under it. Second, during the adoption process, we bond with our child best through loyalty and appreciation. These are the third and fourth levels of bonding. Children need someone who will not condemn them for lashing out or insulting others in their frustration, but who will love them unconditionally and stay faithfully by their side instead of paying like with like. This is where our loyalty to our children shows. Do we stay with them no matter what side of themselves they show? Parents show themselves easily loyal towards well-behaved children and cherish them. But Jesus says he loved us when we were still his enemies. Jesus does not abandon us when we sin. He holds fast to his covenant with us. He blesses those who curse him and goes after every person. In this way, he binds himself to us, and in the same way, we must be bound to a child if we want to help him out of anger and immaturity. From such a caregiver, a child learns that love never crosses other people's boundaries. And here we mean the child's boundaries. And once their prefrontal cortex has matured and can switch perspectives, they are much more likely to not want to cross others' boundaries either. They will have gained self-control. Third, during the adaption process, we influence the child's self-esteem decisively. In the last episode, we said that the first reaction of people when they encounter frustration is to try to bring about change. If they succeed here, it promotes self-esteem. When the change exit cannot be taken, we move on to the adaptation process. And in this process, the child or adult does not succeed. When we stay in the bond with the child and are their safe haven, the strong shoulder for them, and do not turn away from them because they have behaved badly, we make them feel, I am loved and valuable no matter what I do. Circumstances do not change who I am. Even if I don't get what I want, I can get through the loss because I have a strong shoulder by my side to help me through it. I am worth something. I don't define myself by my defeats, and I can get back up. These are extremely important beliefs. There are hardly any people who have such self-esteem that they can keep their inner calm when circumstances are hard. So many people are driven by their low self-esteem and try to oppress others, change their environment, or perform all the time because they don't feel being enough otherwise. That was quite a big information. That's why we recommend to listen to our podcast over and over again, because you can't form new ways of thinking if you've only heard a piece of information once. We want to get you thinking differently. For us, this has been going on for months now, and then even the knowledge of how best to react is not what makes us act maturely either. We believe that we will be in the process of maturation throughout our lives. The Bible calls it sanctification. We so often react out of anger and automated behavior, virtually as immature as our children. But we have decided that we want to become free. And for that to happen, our hearts must rest in the love of God. It means that also for us as adults, it is true. When we lose self-control, God remains faithfully at our side. He does not go away. He does not forbid our anger. He does not suppress us or say we should be ashamed and finally behave in order to be worthy of Him. Quite often, however, that's exactly what we believe deep inside. This also accounts for things such as when we think we are separated from God because we have not done our devotion in the morning or because we have committed some sin or other. We often feel as if we first have to ask for forgiveness, deeply ashamed, so that we can make God feel good about us again and reconcile Him with us. Then He can bless us and love us again and really accompany us during the day. Why do we think this way about God? From God's side, everything is always there. His love, faithfulness, His presence in our lives, His forgiveness, it is already there before we come to Him. Only that we lack faith in it. This is the problem. And that's why we have a very bad conscience. We plague ourselves with shame or fear that we might now be punished or go through the day without God. God wants us to rest in His love no matter what. Only by believing that He is always there, always loving and forgiving, does our potential and the love within us grow. And from that can come maturity from within. What happened in the situation with Monica and her son? Monica stood looking at her completely overwhelmed and actually helpless son, who was in his frustration and could not pull himself together easily and quickly. He fought for the strong desire to drive the car. What thoughts are going through your head in such a situation? Maybe, Oh my, what is everyone else thinking now? I can't let my son behave like this, or I'll be a bad mother or father. You have to let go of all that. These are beliefs that control you, put you under stress, and prevent you from meeting your child with the right empathetic attitude and giving him what he really needs in this situation. Monica tried to imagine that no one was standing around her so that she could fully concentrate on her son. She tried to mirror to him how he must be feeling right now. You're really mad now, aren't you? You wanted so much to ride in this car too. And in a sad, disappointed voice she added, and I said no. With that, she gave her son's anger space and then tried to touch the tender feeling of sadness through her sad voice. That was all she said. To protect her and her son from other people's looks and comments, they went to a quiet place. Her son was screaming all the way, and she was sweating and wrestling with herself. She was so angry herself and would have loved to yell back. But that would never have led him to the tears of futility, and that's what she tried to keep bringing to her fogged mind. He is my son, and now he needs a strong, calm mommy. She tried again and again to show him understanding through facial expressions and posture. This is very important because when the emotional brain registers that there's someone who understands one's distress, one opens up to the caregiver, and the nervous system can regulate itself more quickly. And then Monica just let her son have his time, allowing vulnerable feelings takes time. Sometimes children scream, "Go away! I don't want to see you!" Then you should not impose your own presence or touch the child against his will. However, you can then say, "I'll be in the next room, and you can call for me right away if you want me to come." There are so many more variations on how children behave in a tantrum and how you could respond, but here we just want to give you one example for a connecting and appreciative attitude towards your child. At this point, children do not need to feel any painful consequences because their brain is not capable of learning anything at all from this, except that they are left alone in their frustration and are not welcome. When they experience great disappointments, many adults also need time to find a way to grieve, and they need a shoulder that invites them to do so. And that's what Monica tried to be for her son. Someone who sticks around no matter what emotion is dominating the son at the moment. God's love is also patient and doesn't boast. Monica waited patiently, not judging her child for his raging, but seeing the overwhelmed nervous system behind it. At some point, her son let out a deep sigh and sank into Monica's arms, sobbing. Now she was allowed to accompany his crying. And here again it is so important to say, even grief must not be downplayed or deflected by, "That's enough crying now, it wasn't this bad, you are a strong boy," or, "Look, I have some chocolate for you." Comforting means accompanying the crying, not stopping the crying. The child will stop it themselves when the adaptation process is over. The role here is simply to comfort by being there, just as the Holy Spirit is called our comforter. He takes us seriously, and this gives strength to be able to feel joy again. In fact, when we are comforted, the love hormone oxytocin is produced very strongly, which makes us happy. So when Monica's son had come to an end, she wiped his tears, wiped his nose, and told him that everything was fine between them. That she loved him very much and that even anger could not separate them. Then the matter was over. She didn't hold it against him all the rest of the day that he had spoiled her afternoon, or that he was to blame for her bad mood. After such a difficult situation, children need reassurance that all is over and forgiven, that the bond has remained. Whew! What an experience. Have an afternoon just to lead the child to his tears. Now you might be thinking, isn't that overdoing it? You can't do that every time they throw a tantrum. That's a waste of time for such a small thing. And how embarrassing in public too. You can't tell me that you should always do this until the children grow up. Yes, we are aware that it will never be possible for us to always give our child so much time and opportunity because we ourselves also have obligations or because at the moment we ourselves do not have the nerves and strength to show our child understanding. We are all humans with our own needs, with good and bad moods and so on. We definitely don't always manage to act the way we would like to. And it is also not necessary to accompany every tantrum on the spot. Sometimes it is possible and also makes more sense to keep the child busy with something else first and then address the anger again at home, for example. It's not a matter of always deflecting the tantrum, but just finding an appropriate place and time to do it. It's like going to the toilet. We absolutely have to go to the toilet to stay healthy, but we need the right room for that. Children will not always and everywhere find their sadness because for that they must feel safe and really accepted. An immature child who is allowed to show emotions seems ill-bred in the eyes of the environment, and a parent who does not immediately punish the child and suppresses the anger is the one who is not in control of the child. An immature child is usually not accepted in society. The parent who does not exert pressure and control seems weak. Unfortunately, this is because we still do not understand children well enough. In the fourth podcast episode on attachment, we said that children are plants. They cannot bear fruit by force and effort. And this is why they cannot learn self-control by force. The fruit must come on its own, from within. And for this, we may give the child time. The parental strength and maturity are the parent's own self-control and a lasting bond with the child. Monica is the one responsible for the maturation of her child. She wants to discipline it with the power of love and attachment because adaptation is the natural and healthy way to discipline. She has chosen to do so for these reasons. First, Monica understood how her child feels in such a situation and what he really needs to adapt. When the child's nervous system has matured sufficiently, the child will be able to calm himself in the same way he learned from his attachment figure. Your children also will be able to deal well with their own anger and also with the anger of others. Second, Monica no longer wants to be driven by fear. Neither by fear of what others say or think, nor the fear of her inner beliefs that her child would be spoiled if she didn't yell back on the spot or use violence or I'm not a good mother when my child rages. She wants to free herself from all those phrases. Third, the Bible says if you are angry, do not sin. It is not the frustration that is wrong. The right way to deal with the frustration is what we have to focus on. Fourth, Monica's boundary has also preserved this way. The no has remained. She does not let her son give her commands, nor has she lost her authority. On the contrary, in the eyes of her son, she is his shield, his faithful companion and comforter. These are the true qualities of an admirable authority. Jesus says, "He who abides in me and I in him abides in my love." In the next episode, we want to take another explicit look at us adults because most of us also still have so many things we need to grieve over in order to let go of them. Until next time, be blessed.